there's three things that have to happen, right? All right. So the number one, the machine has to look good. Number two, they have to see the product that they want. And then number three, they have to see the price that they want to buy it for. And so if all three of those things can happen, then you're going to do a shit ton of revenue.
You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast, weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
Hey, this is Quinn. I am the owner operator of Blue Agave Vending, and you are listening to the Next Generation Podcast.
Awesome. Quinn, I'm excited to have you on the show, brother. It's to date still the most downloaded episode that we've had in the past. And so we got to give the people what they want, and they want more Quinn. So that's why we got you back here on the show, bro.
Nice.
Basically, we always start these calls before we even press record, just like catching up and like shooting the shit on how life is. And we just, before pressing record, got so deep down the rabbit hole of like actually really interesting topics that I was like, all right, we got to stop talking right now and just press record, because like this is why the people listen. So before jumping back into all of that stuff, which I took down some notes, so we definitely would love to maybe start off. Last time we had you on the show here, I want to say you were doing about 15,000 a month on some of your vending machine routes. And that was like 9 months ago, I want to say, at this point. So would love to maybe get a little bit of an update on where you're at, and you know, how many machines, locations, revenue wise, anything you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah, for sure. So the business has grown a lot. The thing about vending is like it fluctuates. It could fluctuate on a daily basis, just because for me, I'm always trying to optimize. So selling locations, getting more locations, et cetera, moving machines, right? If a location's underperforming, take that machine out, put it back in, right? But I did land a bigger account. So I currently have, I have basically three systems now. So I use Nayax for my traditional vending. I use a company called Byte for my RFID tag vending machines. And then I use a company called 32 Market, which is very cool. It's not necessarily a micro market, but it's more of a micro market vending machine. It's a smart fridge. And so in my Nayax dashboard, traditional vending, I have 56 live machines. There's one credit card reader out there that's not up. So let's just say 55 machines for now. I have one Byte fridge out there. And then I have one more that I just bought that I'm going to be deploying here pretty soon. And then I have one, a 32 Market, smart cooler. And so I guess that number would put me at, with the device that's off, 59. Yeah, 59. This month I will do, let's see, I'm projecting to do like 35, 37, 40 around in that range. It just depends, because right now, so I won this new account. It has like 15 locations, 26 machines. And for the first month, there's a lot of kinks that you have to work out, number one. And number two, you're testing product to see what people like. So there could be a week where it's, you know, revenue's down, and then you optimize the product and it shoots right up. So, and these people are a little bit more picky versus my other accounts. I'm trending in that range right now. Two guys now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, basically, like, to summarize things up, roughly 60 machines, close to 40K a month in revenue. Is that kind of where you all are at?
Yeah, pretty much.
When you guys,
and in terms of, it's like one, oh, this is gonna be tough with the voice. You have one really big location as well, right? Like, it seems kind of, you know, that some of these locations can make a huge dent in revenue and machine wise. I think you're saying your best one does like just under 12K a month.
yeah. So, yes, yeah, that is definitely the case. I personally think I'm a little overextended right now in regards to amount of locations. I think I can definitely optimize, so I'm gonna take a look at that in the coming months. But yeah, I mean, I have one location that last month did 11,800, and you know, it generally does like, you know, in the 12 range, a little bit over 12. So that one location will have like, has like 9 machines in total at the location.
Is that an apartment building, or where is that?
It's a big apartment building.
Man, I wonder, like, as you go and place these things, because I think your big competitive advantage right now is like you are not afraid to pick up the phone and just start calling all of these apartment buildings and getting a lot of machines to go and get placed where they have to go and get placed. When you are cold calling all of these companies, and even when you go and place the actual machines, Is there ever like a marketing tactic that you'll do to kind of like get somebody to spend on that first machine? Because like I feel like the easiest example would be if I'm living in an apartment building and somebody drops off a postcard on my door, says like, hey, get a free snack on us. You know, it costs money, right? I don't know how you do that, a preloaded debit card or something stupid like that. Like that would definitely cost money. But if I go and get that free snack, now I'm in the mindset of like, cool, I know this is there and I can consistently go and get like a Clif Bar anytime that I'm like just hanging out. Have you ever tried anything like that?
That's a super good idea. I mean, I personally, I have not. I'm my machines are situated well enough. Like there's three things that have to happen, right? All right. So the number one, the machine has to look good. Number two, they have to see the product that they want. And then number three, they have to see the price that they want to buy it for. And so if all three of those things can happen, then you're gonna do a shit ton of revenue. And you don't really need to do those marketing tactics. Let's just say you get an office building. This is more applicable to like an office building or I don't know, a hospital or something like that. Basically what you do is you first day you go introduce yourself and just give away free products to everybody. Like, hey, you want a Coke? And the goal is obviously to acquire that customer. Like, hey, I'm the new vending guy. Or I mean, like another strategy there would be like literally just go walk in with $101 bills and just give everybody a $1 bill and be like, go use my vending machine. Get them used to doing that. I like the idea of handing out postcards. I think that's a cool idea, and I might do that on some of my more luxury places. My smart coolers and stuff like that, those are more luxurious buildings, and that's the scenario where you could, if you do that, you can literally take a business from like doing 2,000 a machine doing 2,000 a month to like 3,000 by just doing that. And generally you can own those customers for a prolonged period, because you know, if you're in certain areas, they just don't want to go out to 7-Eleven. It's just a pain in the butt. So
do any of the new smart machines offer like I don't know, loyalty points or referrals or anything like that? Or is it not really at that level yet?
They do, but I don't feel a need to do that. I think where you would do that is like let's just say you have a warehouse and there's, I don't know, 1,000 people, okay? And then you have a micro market, which is basically an unattended kiosk. And that's where there's fridges. And then you pull out an item and you go up to the kiosk and you swipe your card and pay for it. Well, that's a scenario where like, you know, you can, that is like a big AOV purchase, right? And so like me, I'm selling a Coke for $1, $2.50, whatever. My AOV is trending up with the nicer equipment. But there, like, hey, if you're serving somebody a lunch, like, so $10 per person or whatever that number is, well, you know, if your margin is 50%, so you're buying it for $5 and selling for 10 and you're making $5 on that purchase. I mean, if you can incentivize as many people to use your thing as possible, I mean, you're going to make a lot of money. So, I think that's where it comes into a little bit more into play.
Totally. Also, I don't think we've updated the listeners. We have to apologize formally for Gio's voice. It's gone, but somehow still persevering through the podcast. So if anyone, like, I feel like the best comparison, if you've ever seen the movie Grown Ups, that dog that's outside, for anyone who doesn't know, just watch the YouTube video. That's like, that's what Gio's sounding like right now.
Not great.
Okay, we actually got a couple things here that I want to like kind of dive into more on these, on the actual vending side before jumping into other areas. Like one, just not thinking about like another marketing tactic. I don't know if you're allowed to do this, but dude, you should totally set up one of these like text numbers and put a sticker on all of your machines around like, hey, want a free promo or want a free deal? Like text this. And then next time you know that you're about to go to a route to go and like replace, I don't know, all of like the Monsters or like Diet Cokes or whatever, just be like, hey, just a heads up, like Diet Cokes 20% off now, or like $1 off, or I don't know, whatever it would be, right? Keep the margin on it, but basically get to the point where like people go downstairs, grab that, maybe they're grabbing like a bag of chips as well, and then you'll know that you'll be able to like replace that instantly. I don't know if this is even like a, like that would help kind of thing. Like it's probably incremental revenue, but I'm sure that there's probably a lot of ways to kind of like drive that AOV and LTV up on these accounts.
Yeah, I think so as well. Like, I'll give you one example of like where that would be applicable. So I just put a cold food machine in, and basically I had a snack and a drink machine next to it, and basically now I'm doing meals. So you can get like a tuna sandwich, chips, and a water for like $8, right? So in that scenario, it'd be like, hey, I just put this machine in or this product, like go check it out, right? Because right now it's like, oh, if you walk in the break room and you see it, like that's kind of how it would go. So yeah, I mean, I definitely think you can get creative with it. And I think you can, once you get like things where you're vending higher ticketed items, I think this stuff like really becomes applicable, and that's where you can make a lot of money. So
what does your back office kind of look like now in terms of a team and everything? Cause you scaled up pretty fast. So I'm assuming you probably had to bring more people. I know you got a warehouse space that I think you got robbed as well. So I think we'll hit that. But what does that all look like?
Yeah. So, the great thing about Venny is you don't have to go every day, right? So it's, you can be very lean and run a pretty big operation, to be honest. I have two guys now, and I'm still trying to figure out the optimal strategy. But the gist of it is they both go out together, pre-pack the boxes together, and then go out. I mean, they're doing a lot of work together. So I've got two guys, and then I have a virtual assistant who does my bookkeeping and stuff like that on a not a day-to-day but more weekly. And then I have a bookkeeping service that does like QuickBook stuff and stuff like that. So pretty lean operation, to be honest.
Do you think that you can probably take that team to like, I don't know, 80, 100 locations, or do you think that you're kind of beginning to feel like you need a few more people?
No.
The awkward nervous laugh.
No, it's not that. It's more like the truck that I have. So I have an E350 cargo van extended. If I got like a big box truck, like it's just the amount of products that we can fit. Like so with new when you put so it, there's a couple different machines. So a stacker, you just put cases in of soda, right? And then a snack machine that requires a box, you got to put all the products in there. And then a glass face drink machine that requires a box, you got to put all the products in there. The thing that takes up a lot of space is the boxes. And so if I just had all stackers, I mean, yeah, I could make this thing huge and it would just be all sodas in my truck. But you got to put these boxes from Costco, and they're pretty decently sized.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty much the limiting factor. But I have one ace worker, dude, the beast. I set him up. Well, he prospected it, and then I pretty much came in and closed the deal up in LA. He's got an account that does about 8,000 a month. He goes like once a week. And so he knows the business really well because he has his own accounts. Like he knows how to work the machine, so I can rely on him for anything. He's probably, I always say like, hey, like you got to bring on people and make them 80% of you. I don't know. I mean, from a stocking perspective, he's like 150% of me. He works way faster.
Mm-hmm.
From a machine standpoint, not quite there, maybe 80%, I don't know, maybe less.
Yeah, but that makes sense. I'm curious too, to take things less in the weeds and more like high level, right? I think when we were chatting before, like if this is the kind of thing where like you're talking about how you bought this whole condo or apartment over in San Diego, and like, you know, now vending machines are cash flowing more than your actual apartment, right? And there's whole conversation to be had around like, okay, the equity creation side and all of that kind of stuff too. But to kind of spare it from that, I think knowing what you know now, how many months or how many years are you into this like vending business? A year and a half, 2 years?
Yeah, 2 years. Maybe two and some change.
So like knowing what you know now, would you have picked the same business to go into? Because I think there is like some level of like sunk cost fallacy where like, you know, you are doing what you're doing today because it's what you've been doing for the last 2.5 years. But are there are there certain things that you're like, ah, shit, like I'm doing it today because it cash flows well, but if I had my options, I actually would have gone and done this instead.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I had a limited liquidity, obviously I would just go into real estate. I mean, I have an eye for turning a house into and making it look sexy. I know how to do that. I'm pretty good at marketing that stuff. If I had unlimited liquidity, of course I'd be doing that. But this was just more like, hey, you can do this, like you can fucking bootstrap this thing and kind of take it from there. So I was never doing it to be unique or anything like that. It was simply just like, hey, like kind of necessity. And the whole idea that like, you know, it's kind of passive in a sense. If I had unlimited liquidity, would I do it? No. If I didn't, then yeah, I'd probably do it.
And is there something that you would have done differently from day one if you were to go and start again? Where, like, right now, 60 locations, 40K a month. Was there something that you were just totally wasting your time on early on that in hindsight you would be like, nope, just do these two things and you'll be totally good?
Yeah, well, so not 60 locations, 60 machines. I don't know, it's tough because like there wasn't like this like magic moment where I was like, oh God, like I was really messing it up and now I'm doing so much better. I mean, really, it just took like one time of me getting my buddy's mechanic shop and to be like, oh, okay, this location sucks. Like, never doing that again. And here we go. So, I mean, that was pretty much it. What I would say to like most people like just getting into it is like definitely don't skip that step. You need to understand that like, oh, this is a shitty location. I could tell you, hey, I don't recommend this location, whatever. I think I had a guy tweet me or DM me. He's like, oh, like I just got this hotel, like 20 people. I'm like, oh, you should probably pass on that, or 20 rooms, you should probably pass on that. But looking back at that, I mean, like, dude, you probably should not pass on that. You should go in there and fail. And if this is something you enjoy, then like press forward.
What is your biggest bottleneck in terms of trying to scale everything out? Is it prospecting and just making the cold calls, or is there anything else there?
I mean, at the end of the day, when you think about it, you have 60 machines out there. It's 60 little 7-Elevens, right? And so, the time setting it up, the time doing like solving the problems on the machines at location, that's a bottleneck. So I definitely would need to outsource that. Once you get it dialed in, it's not that robust. But when you have machines that are doing 100 vends a day, there's problems with the coins. There's problems with the bills. Like it just that's just what happens. So I'd say that's the biggest bottleneck. For me, my prospecting pipeline was so robust because I was making so many calls at first that like, I don't really need to make calls. Like this other account, like it was just there and it was like sitting there for like 6 months for me to like work and finally land. And then it's like a lot of locations, right? So it's, I wouldn't say the sales, but it's more like the operational side.
That makes sense. I made it. This is the last thing I want to at least dive into on vending. Then I want to dive into like a bunch of this other stuff that you're talking about with like acquisitions and all of that kind of stuff. But I made a tweet like a while ago about like basically anytime I go on a date now with a girl, I just don't tell her what I do for work because describing to anybody, like any girl, like, hey, I own storage units, like basically becomes impossible to explain. Very easy and obvious to dudes on Twitter, but very, very difficult to girls at sushi restaurants. And so I think you had like one of the funniest responses around like, yeah, you think storage and stuff, like try explain vending. So like less so even from like a dating standpoint, but like more so from friends, family, new people that you meet that like aren't even necessarily like on Twitter and like privy to that kind of game. Like, how do you just describe to people that like you own and operate 60 different vending machines? Like, is that like still like the main MO?
It's tough because like here's what cuts through all the bullshit is the revenue number. If you just say like, yeah, I'm doing 40,000, I do vending machines, they're like, oh, holy fuck, like what's going on here? But if you don't do that and you're like, yeah, I just operate vending machines, th then they start asking their main questions like, oh, like where? Like, oh, that's so cool. Like, but in reality, I know what they're thinking in the back of their mind. They're probably like, oh, this kid's an idiot, right? So yeah, it's tough. Like, I don't know, I haven't really solved it, but what I would say is like I've probably been more like when I was in college, I was ashamed of getting in sales for some reason. I don't know. I thought I had like a bad stigma, but in reality, it was like the most life-changing thing ever. Same thing with vending. It's like, it's kind of weird to tell somebody like, oh, you're in vending. And because like, hey, you're not supposed to be in vending. You're supposed to be on Wall Street. You're supposed to be doing some dope stuff at Facebook or whatever. But I guess I'm just more comfortable now. And I'll just be like, yeah, I'm in vending. And then I don't really like say anything more than that. And but yeah.
Vending, I feel like if you leave the word machines off of it too, vending almost is like, oh, is he like, does he buy for like TJ Maxx? Is he like, you know, like a distributor? Like, what's he doing here?
It's funny. Yeah, they really need to come see the operation, like see my warehouse, and they're like, oh wow, like okay, like how do I do this?
Yeah, that makes so much more sense. Wait,
Really good
I do
point.
want to quickly transition into something as well, because I think part of my favorite parts of doing some of these recap episodes is I get to see like, cool, last time you were on the show, you said this. And like, I think one of the things you said is like, you want to expand your vending routes and like really build up the businesses. The other thing that you said, and because this was again like 8 or 9 months ago, and like we don't have to get too deep here, but I think it's helpful from an audience standpoint to know that like a lot of these episodes can sometimes be like marketing to a degree of like you were launching an entire coffee brand, Fairway Coffee, basically like coffee targeted towards like golfers. And I know recently, like a month ago or a couple of weeks ago, you decided like, hey, I'm scrapping this idea. I'm not actually going to go and pursue it and work on this business any longer. I'd love to maybe just get like a quick, like, I don't know, minute long rant on like why scrap it and like why it maybe didn't work out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's really just like understanding like your skill set. Like, yeah, I can make viral TikToks, but a viral TikTok can't really make me $1 million, right? I can sit there and make 200 cold calls a day, no problem. And one of those calls is could potentially make me $1 million. And so you just have to weigh those factors, I guess. And that's kind of where it led me to. I mean, I guess I was kind of stretched thin as well. I mean, doing a coffee brand, trying to prospect real estate, trying to prospect laundromats, doing vending. Like it's really just like prioritizing what can make you the most money right now. And I think a brand could down the road, but I just didn't fully understand it as well as I do. I understand the local side well, that I got paid to do that, right? And so I just understood that. I don't really know how to make a successful ad campaign. I can make a viral TikTok, but I didn't really fully understand that. I didn't really have the desire to learn that when I could just green light a data sheet and call everybody.
So what are you focusing on now, right now? Is it mostly, are you just, hey, all in on vending? This is what I do night and day. Or are you still kind of cold calling some real estate spots, laundromats, or, you know, what does that look like?
Yeah. So, vending is my priority when I'm winning newer accounts and stuff like that. So like I'll throw in some cold calls in there and stuff like that. And then when you do win those accounts, you kind of got to drop everything, unfortunately, and make sure it's streamlined. Cause right when you win an account, it's important that you take care of them and it's all set up correctly. Right. Like that first week is when you have the most, you know, probability of problems, I guess. But yeah, so like my day-to-day, if I'm not setting up a new account or something like that, I am prospecting real estate. I got a buddy on Boston, Ben, who I cold call for. And we're looking to make off market acquisitions and industrial flex, things like that. I was prospecting laundromats. There's 4 team members on our team. And so we had to find an exceptional laundromat to be able to feed all those mouths. And there just wasn't a lot of exceptional laundromats out there. And so after this last deal that we reviewed, that was an exceptional laundromat, but the price was too high and some of the leases were problematic. I kind of tapered off that. I would love to start it up again, but I think what I need is a large liquidity event for myself personally. So that way I don't need to ask people to raise money. That to me is problematic. Or it's not problematic, but I just don't enjoy it. I prefer to do and then have them talk to me versus me trying to convince them when I already know something is going to work. And the reality is like the people that have money are real estate guys, right? The people that don't have money is a lot of SMB operators. They do have money, but they don't have $1 million sitting in their bank or whatever, right? Whatever that number is. And so if you just want to fire off and buy this laundromat for like 1.5 and it's 3 locations, I just didn't see a lot of those people that were interested in doing that. And so I think life is a lot like, hey, you gotta like attack what is hot, basically, or not necessarily hot, but like figure out like what's the lowest hanging fruit and what can you attack like the hardest without, I don't know, being prolonged. And I think real estate is super hot, right? So is that the lowest hanging fruit? Probably not. Laundromats are probably a little bit cheaper. What is even easier to get, right? Like, I know this is cliche, but, or like kind of sounds dumb, but when you read Rich Dad Poor Dad, when he was buying in Phoenix and all that stuff, or wherever he's buying in Arizona, he's buying at the homes at foreclosure, right? And he's like, dude, that's the lowest hanging fruit. Once that stopped being, once that wasn't the lowest hanging fruit, just transition to something else. And I think that's an important lesson. Is it wholly true? Probably not, but I think it's something to take note of. And that's kind of what I've been implying.
On the real estate side, correct me if I'm wrong, do you still own that San Diego apartment or condo? I thought you sold that for some reason.
Yeah. So I bought a house out of college with two buddies. And it was a single family, rented it. Plan was to buy more property. And then they just didn't want to do that. So I couldn't have that liquidity tied up in there. With that cash flow not being substantial. So I cashed out of that deal early.
What does that mean? Does that mean like you had them buy you out? Does that mean you sold the property?
Yeah, I wanted to give cash or keys to our tenants, but it was long-term friendship, but then so kind of messy. I had them buy me out.
Okay, that makes sense. So then is the new play then, because like it seems like if somebody just DM me is like, yo, what's Quinn good at? I would just probably say like the dude does not care to be hung up on the phone. Like he's very comfortable putting himself out there and like willing to go and hustle to eat basically. And not to eat, but like to find deals, to buy businesses, that kind of stuff. Would you say now that like from a real estate standpoint, if your main day-to-day is like acquiring the stuff, are you getting a finder's fee? Like, have you guys bought properties from all of this stuff?
Yeah, so I'll work with people if there's three upsides for me. And same thing with Venny. So basically if I find this deal, I want three options to make money. Okay. Number one, we buy it and then we do the deal together. I'm part of that equity stack. Number two, we buy it and then we flip that or you don't even have to really buy it. You just get it under contract and flip that contract to somebody else. Right. Or number three, you buy it and then flip it to somebody else. Right. So I guess one and two are kind of like mixed together.
Two is essentially wholesaling, where like you get up a contract, you never put a dollar down, and then you sell that contract. Three is you physically purchase the entire property. What's that called? There's a term for that. I want to say
whole. I don't know. I haven't done it yet, so I guess I'm like just speaking out there. But like those are, I want that flexibility to happen if we're going to do something, if I'm cold calling for you. I don't just want like, hey, here's a finder's fee. I there needs to be more optionality there. Otherwise, I don't think it's worth my time. And so that's what I do in real estate. And my buddy out there, Ben, those are kind of like how we work together.
Have you considered buying out the warehouse that you currently rent?
Yeah, good question. So a church owns it. And so that's tough.
How does church end up with a warehouse?
They got a lot of money, dude. Yeah, I don't know. But also, like, I'm in San Diego. So, I mean, this stuff is pretty pricey. I mean, I don't know what this would go for, but I mean, definitely not under two, maybe three, maybe five, honestly.
For what it's worth, the technical term for what I was just describing earlier is just wholetailing, is a term. Basically what it means, you buy it, you fix it up real quick and with the immediate goal to flip. Not like, I think traditionally in real estate, like a buy, fix and flip can be done over like a 6 to 12 month time frame. I think in wholetailing, the concept is we're going to buy it, we're going to go and put our money down, and then like literally day one, we do like these three things just to make it look pretty and like immediately put it back on the market. Supposedly the time frame is what differentiates it from just the fix and flips.
Where this is stemming from is like in vending. Okay. So there's three options of vending that I could do. So I can find a location for somebody, not put a vending machine there and sell the location just straight up. Right. The other option is for me to put a vending machine there and realize the revenue. And if it's a little bit too, let's say that's $500 a month, I could sell that off for 12 months gross. So 6,000. The third option is for me to hold the business, right? Put my machine there and operate the business. So those are the three upsides that I look for in vending. And so I just am converting that over to real estate. I think that's where it's coming from basically.
On that note, a side question on the vending part. At what point can you kind of have a big enough vending route or, you know, machines where you have enough scale to kind of sell the business as, you know, equity as a multiple of revenue type of thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I really don't know. I think that's one of the downsides in vending is there's not a lot of multiples on these businesses. So, I mean, yeah, you can, the cash flow is awesome, but the multiples are pretty weak. I don't know why that is, but I think it has to do with like banks and stuff like that. You know, I guess we'll figure out that answer once I actually do it. But from what I've seen in the marketplace and the people that I've talked to, they're generally just trading at 12 months gross. So if it does $1 million, sell for $1 million.
When you were talking about before about like basically acquiring off market businesses, repackaging them and then like bring them on market, like it's the interesting part there is that technically it's not a crazy value add play, right? The value add is you finding it in the first place. And that's where like your cold calling and outreach and all that kind of stuff becomes super valuable. With the exception of maybe just the real estate stuff that it sounds like y'all are doing today, are there specific niches or types of businesses that you think you've either seen other people do this with, you know, not just single family residentials or like industrial space or things like that?
Yeah. So again, this, you learn so much stuff by just literally doing, and vending is probably, most people think it's dumb as hell. That's okay. I think it's dumb as hell too, but you learn a lot. Right. And, number one, you learn a lot without having like a ton of capital required. And so I've noticed that there was a massive demand for locations and those businesses. Okay. So I just took that a little bit further and I started looking at like bigger deals, right? Forget the $500 a month one. How about the $80,000 a year one, right? And what I've noticed was there's massive demand for businesses. And all you really need to do is be able to cold call these places and essentially just, I think it's better to buy them. Because when you try and do this like broker strategy, these people are it's kind of tough to work with. So let's just say I find a laundromat for $200,000, right? I think it's better just to buy that laundromat, and then you don't need to do anything. You just put it on Biz Buy Sell or a place where you sell it and sell for $300,000. That's it. It's honestly insane. I know I'm making it sound simple, but I'll just give you guys some context. So we purchased a business and a route of a vending business for 60, and then we never even operated the business, and we advertised it and sold it for 80. Basically what it is just the inefficiencies in regards to the owners not knowing what the value of the business is worth. If somebody doesn't know what it trades at, well then there you go. That's all you really need to do. You don't need to do anything else.
I feel like
laundromat. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, I feel like a play there that could be interesting, right? Because like what you're really doing is you're basically just like glamming it up a little bit and getting more eyes on it, right? If you have more, if everyone in the world sees this deal, great. Now there's probably somebody who's willing to go and pay more essentially for the business. What could be an interesting idea there, if anyone wants to kind of go into like the real estate or even like short-term rental space, is I wonder if there's an opportunity to basically just go and buy Airbnbs that have listings that like all it is you buy it based on the cash flow of the Airbnb. You find Airbnbs that have bad photos, not professional photos taken. So like they're taken like on like an iPhone 6 or whatever. Like the perfect example is like we were just down in Austin in a really cool house that was like, I think it cost like $5,500 or $6,000 or something like that for the month. Roughly in that range. But like the photos looked terrible, and we showed up on day one and we're like, oh wow, this place is like substantially cooler than like we thought it was, because they poorly marketed the place. So upon checking out, I messaged a guy. I was like, hey, by the way, like if you ever want to sell, like just keep me in mind. Didn't get a response. I think that could potentially be like a really easy opportunity. Like based on what you're saying, is you go in, you buy for $800,000 or something like that, hire a professional photographer for like $400, you know, show 2 to 3 months in increased bookings, and then just resell it again.
Yeah. And one thing to like, look, if you don't want to take the risk, just make up a fake post and literally start advertising this and test demand.
Yeah.
So, I mean, literally we'll do that. We'll put out an ad on, you know, out there online and, hey, vending business for sale, $100,000, get like 200 people hit me up. And then all I got to do is go find a vending business that is worth $100,000 and buy it for $50,000, $60,000. Yeah,
that's smart. You already have your margin baked in then basically.
Yeah. And that's just vending. I mean, like there's, you could do as laundromat. You could do this with car wash. It's just like, you know, I think what you need to understand is like, there's less, buyers at certain levels. There's a lot of buyers at the 10 to like $100,000 range. $100,000 to like $500,000, there's not as many, but there's still some. $500,000 plus, there's probably a lot less, right? Because now you're talking about SBA. Like not a lot of people have $500,000 in their bank account, right? And so, you know, you gotta get loans and all that crap. And so that's kind of the nice thing about vending. You buy these big businesses, kind of piece them off, stuff like that.
Anything you'd recommend for people that are, you know, willing to hustle and they either want to do real estate or anything else that they're going to make a ton of money cold calling on?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about cold calling is like, it's not hard. You just got to go do it. Right. That's the biggest thing. Like, and the thing that you need to understand about cold calling is like, you're not, you figure it out by cold calling. Like, you don't have the answer preset in your mind. Like the reason why you cold call is an exploration of the answer. I don't know who the decision maker is. That's why I'm calling. I don't know what the pitch is. That's why I'm calling. You have to all figure this out. And I think a lot of people get discouraged on that. But what I would say is like, look for things that have a robust demand, and then start cold calling those places. Don't like do anything else. Like I'll give you one example. So I'm looking at right now, purchasing, hopefully this doesn't blow up, but I'm looking at right now to purchase a cargo van and advertise it on Turo. Okay. Why a cargo van? Well, if this business doesn't work, then I could just use it for my business. But also because you don't even need to clean the damn thing, and people really hate going to U-Haul. So probably going to do that. And what's the first thing that comes to my mind? I could make this business way bigger versus other operators on Turo. Why? Because I have cold calling skills. And what does that mean? Call up the fucking apartment next to you and say, hey, I'll give you 50% of the sale if you can drive business to my van and get your residents to use my business, right? Is that guy on Turo doing this? Probably not, but is he getting sales just on Turo? Yeah, right? So that's how I can separate myself. Like if I can make myself 20% better than his business, well then I'm gonna have more reviews, et cetera. And that's just an idea. I think I'm gonna pull the trigger. It's just been hard to find a cargo van for it.
That's where Connor, you spent a couple weeks ago calling moving companies, right?
Yeah, but it was a total disaster because I said like, for the storage stuff, Nick Huber made a whole tweet about how like he'll go and call a bunch of moving companies, and anytime that somebody will go and refer a tenant who like moves into the facility, they will go and just like Venmo, Zelle, Cash App, whatever the team lead, like $100 directly to them, right? So like they're kind of pretty nicely incentivized, especially if you're just like running a moving company or like the team lead there. So I got a whole list of like moving companies in the town that were owning the storage in, and I called all of them, and like probably half of them, like most didn't answer, honestly, just right off the bat. We got one good lead out of it. She hasn't sent us anything, but we'll see. And the other half are like, why would I send you a customer? And I was like, oh, well, like I'll send y'all like $100. Like it'll be super easy. They don't even have to like do anything crazy. They just have to mention your name when they move in. And like, I promise you, like I'll honor it day one. Like, and if there is anyone that you think you sent over to us that like we didn't follow up with you first, like just let us know. And like, if they moved in, we'll pay you, promise. They're like, no. Why would I send you a customer when we also own storage? I was like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. We're your competitors. And so like this happened like 8 times. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to probably try to vet these a little bit better before calling next time.
Yeah. But that's okay. I mean, like, honestly, you learn that, like that information doesn't live online. Like how are you going to go find that? Surely moving owns 15 different self-storage facilities down the road, but now, you made the calls and now you just pivot right now. Instead of calling the movers, now you call apartment buildings.
We had a brief conversation. This is kind of where I wanted to press record last time, like as we were starting up today, where you mentioned not really wanting to raise money. Like, and I think a lot of that comes from like not wanting to have a boss. And I actually had a call right before this where I was chatting with somebody and she was basically saying like, yeah, if I were to go and run my business again, I probably would not want to go and hire investors. And I've noticed personally, like when I've probably been doing like entrepreneurial stuff in a like somewhat more legitimate way and for the past like call it 7 years, and if you flashback 7 years ago, it's like 2015, and it was kind of like the heyday of like Uber and Airbnb when like raising a ton of money and like having a $1 billion valuation is like really sexy and fun. And now specifically, so in the last like 2 to 3 years, like people don't want that. They don't want 500 employees. They don't want to have like crazy like investors and earnings calls and all this kind of stuff. I personally find that like, people just kind of want $1 million cash every single year. Like, and if you can find like an easy way to go and cash flow that, and nothing in business is ever easy, but like there are easier things, then it's a good time. Is there a reason that like you don't want investors, even if it means that maybe you'll go and be able to buy like those 5 laundromats or expand your store or your vending route or buy more real estate?
Yeah, I think from the vending aspect, I can just bootstrap it, so I don't really need investors. But I think it's not that I don't want investors. It's more that they it's something new for them, and I'm really just not willing to explain, to be honest. Like, I'd rather just do, and then if you like it, then you can invest, and that's just better overall. I understand you can't do that for everything. Like, I'm probably never going to be liquid $500 million, so I'm probably gonna have to get investors, right? I mean, hopefully I'm liquid in 500 million, but we'll see. But yeah, so once you get into real estate, I think you definitely do need to raise, if you're very aggressive and your pipeline is flushed. But I think where it becomes challenging to raise is on more unique opportunities. And that's kind of where I'm coming from. Cause you have this whole, you're introducing something to somebody new that they don't fully understand, and it's harder for them to take a risk. Well, it's hard for me to get you fired up to take that risk. It's not hard for me, but I don't want to do it all the time. I need you just trust me. And so when it's just my money, it's just like way easier. And so that's kind of like where I'm coming from the raising standpoint.
And I do think that content is the best way to maybe solve that issue. I mean, you've been posting for the last, 700 plus days talking about vending routes and what it means to stock up with like a cargo van with Coca-Cola's and like it's super niche stuff. But at this point, like, you and I could have never chatted on Zoom or done a podcast together, whatever, and I would know exactly what you do and how it works and what the margins look like and how much revenue you're making. And so like, it kind of increases that confidence in a way that like a 30-minute sales call or investor call can't. So I will say, like, what's nice, and for anyone maybe thinking about this today, where maybe today they're thinking, hey, I don't want any investors. I don't think I'm going to want investors, but maybe like 5 years from now, I just might. The best way to probably approach that is just consistently going and showing proof of work and building up that proof of success to kind of show like, hey, I'm a winner. This business is a winner. And like, I can go and like, keep on putting out content, showing like what kind of returns we're getting.
I'd say even on that note, not even investors, but like, we've sent banks, stuff we've been doing and links to articles, if anyone wrote anything interesting about us. And they like that. Like, we've gotten comments and like the bankers are like, wow, like, you guys have like impressive resumes and the stuff you've been building in public is really cool. And I think it just makes people a lot more comfortable with it. So even if you don't want investors, there's always, I don't know, there's probably downsides to it. And you see a lot of the bigger people that are having issues with it now, but I think there's probably a good kind of interim where you get enough visibility into what you're doing that other people can reach out if they want. And, you do build up that network there.
I agree. Yeah. And one it's kind of like off topic, but I'm starting to see some political ads on TV, and I find it funny because I literally don't trust these people at all. And they're spending all this money and like showing me like what they do. And I'm just like, dude, like, start building. If you're actually doing this, let me see like what you're doing on social media or on Twitter or something like that. And if you're not doing that, then like, quite frankly, kick rocks.
It's like dude in suit and tie walking around a Harlem food market to go and like give back to community. It's like, are you doing this for the commercial, or like, were you there last Saturday too? Kind of thing.
The ad was like, this guy is like talking about homeless people and stuff like that. I'm like, dude, come down to my vending business and I'll show you what it's really up. Because I just found that funny.
It's the trust thing. Like it's one thing. That's where anyone can fake it for like an hour, can fake it for a day, less can fake it for a week, for a month. Like, but when you are consistently putting stuff out for years and years and years, it's really tough to lie. It's really tough to bullshit.
That's why Joe Rogan is so powerful. I mean,
right. Exactly. Like just from listening to conversations and like reading his stuff and like following his workouts on Instagram, like over time, you're like, oh, he's kind of like me. And like, you hear him get a little vulnerable too. And then you're like, oh, cool. Like Joe Rogan's afraid. Like, I think, who was I just having this conversation with? Mark Zuckerberg just went on like a whole like podcast tour, and his media people must be like ecstatic right now, because I think like 6 months ago, if you asked people what they thought about Mark Zuckerberg, and they're like, total freaking robot. And then I just heard him on like the Tim Ferriss show, like maybe 3 months ago. And I walked away. I was like, oh, Mark Zuckerberg cares about his family. Mark Zuckerberg like wants his kids to be happy. It's like, well, no shit, that's obvious. But like he like kind of showed a little bit like empathy and like a little bit like let his guard down some of these podcasts. And like, I think like over time he does that a little bit more, and like people's public opinion will totally sway.
Yeah, I agree.
I know we're kind of getting close to time here. I want to wrap up with somewhat more of like a loaded, like high level question that you might not have a good answer for, but if you do, I would love to kind of hear it. You basically had a tweet, what is this, like a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, basically, and I'll just read it verbatim here. It says, Did you think it was possible to sell $30,000 worth of snacks, candy, or soda through a vending machine a month until you saw me doing it? Funny thing is, I didn't either until I started doing it, right? And I think that kind of speaks to the expectation of, like, once you see someone doing it, doing something, it totally changes how you think about it. Like, I think the craziest example, if people want to look this up and fact check it, because I'm definitely going to get the thing wrong, but, like, the first person who broke, I believe, the 4-minute mile, like, everyone said, like, it's human and biologically impossible. Somebody broke it. And then, like, 3 weeks later, somebody else broke their time, right? Because they're like, oh, it's possible. Now I just got to, like, push myself more. So the question I've got for you, you know, this is the second time on the podcast, and I think maybe if everything goes well, we can do a third, even, like, more updates and stuff like that, like, a year or so from now. But, like, is there anything that you feel like is impossible today that, like, as you're kind of thinking about your business, you're like, yeah, like, it's not going to get there. Like, I don't think that's going to be where it's going to get, not because I don't want to, but because, like, it's going to be really tough.
That's, like, from this business, I don't really, like, think about it like that. I don't know. Like, the way when I started the business, I felt after a while, like, I felt like I could do anything, honestly. Like, my risk appetite is, like, increased, and my ability to just do is increased substantially. Because I just know it's possible. Like, I mean, you can sell candy and make money like this. I mean, like, I really don't see obstacles per se. And I feel like I can identify things that, like, it just won't work as well from starting the business.
If people want to go follow what you're doing, where can they go and check you out?
Twitter is where I share the most. I did do a little TikTok, but that was going too viral. And so I had to taper that down. So Twitter, I want to start posting on LinkedIn. I don't know. We'll see. I don't really post on Instagram, so don't follow me there. But if you know me, follow me on there. But Twitter, just at Quinn J. Miller. That's it.
Awesome, man. We'll link that down in the show notes below. Thanks again for coming on the show, man.
Cool, guys. Thank you.
If you thought today's episode was awesome, we would love it if you would leave a 5-star review on the podcast, either on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It makes a huge difference and lets us get cooler and cooler guests for future episodes.